The New York Times reports that the ExoMars 2016 spacecraft is scheduled to arrive at the Red Planet today. This is a joint effort by the European and Russian space agencies. The Times reports that a primary goal of the mission is to search for methane and other gases which could offer hints of life on the planet. It's Current State on WKAR. Welcome back. I'm Mark Bayshore. Last Friday, we brought you an interview with Teresa Abbott, the Grand Ledge Democrat who's trying to win back her seat in Michigan's 71st House District. Abbott's defeat in 2014 was one of the closest races that year, losing by only 146 votes. Today, we continue our election 2016 coverage by hearing from Abbott's opponent in the 71st, incumbent State Representative Tom Barrett. Current State's Kevin Lavery sat down with Barrett this week to chat about his first term in Lansing and his goals if he should win re-election. Kevin, where did the interview take place?
It was in Charlotte, Mark. We met at Representative Barrett's campaign office. It's an unassuming brick building just down the street from the Eaton County Courthouse. Tom Barrett told me he chose Charlotte as his home base because he believes it's a city on the rebound. Of course, the economy is a big concern here, as it is all over the state and the country. And I started off by asking Mr. Barrett the same question I asked Teresa Abbott last week. What do his constituents care about?
Well, I hear people talk about a lot of different things as I've traveled the district and knocked on a lot of doors. Certainly education is important, infrastructure is important, and a lot of jobs and economy and other sentiments like that are what people think are important in this district, which is pretty typical around the state, I would say, of what people think is going on right now in Michigan.
Kevin, the 71st House District sits largely in Eaton County, southwest of Lansing. This area was really a battleground in the 2014 election and could be again this year. Why is that the case?
Well, first off, you've got a district with a number of growing urban centers that includes Delta Township, Grand Ledge, and Charlotte. Those areas are also becoming more ethnically diverse. For example, Eaton County's Hispanic population has grown significantly over the past decade. Eaton County's pretty urban-rural mix fosters a distinct liberal versus conservative mindset. Tom Barrett tells me it's just about a 50-50 ratio. He recognizes, of course, that there are split opinions in his district, but he's also quick to point out that he's not afraid, even as a freshman lawmaker, to go against his party and vote his conscience.
I certainly know that not everyone's going to agree with me on every single vote that I take or every single issue that I believe in, but I think they will find that I'm a sensible person and someone that they can trust to lead our district in Lansing. And I think I've done a good job of that. I am a Republican, but I've voted against my party 85 times since I've been in Lansing. I was the only Republican to vote against the governor's education budget this year, and I was one of only 10 in the entire state House of Representatives to vote against it last year. I have a very firm belief that we shouldn't be shifting money out of our K-12 classrooms like the current education budget does. I took that principled stance 2 years ago, and then I voted that way consistently in Lansing. And I think that's an important thing for people to realize is I may be a Republican, but I don't just follow the party line on every single issue that comes up. I'm willing to put in my own research and form my own opinion on it.
Wow. Tom Barrett said he's gone against his party's vote 85 times in just 2 years at the Capitol. Is he banking on that record to reach out to Democrats who might be thinking about crossing over on Election Day?
I really can't say that with any certainty, Mark, but I can say there is at least one other issue on which he and Democrat Teresa Abbott agree. See, back in 2011, the Republican majority gave a nearly $2 billion tax cut to large corporations, and Teresa Abbott says that saddled working families with a bigger tax burden while creating a corporate welfare atmosphere. Representative Barrett was not in Lansing back then, but he says he's fighting that now.
I can only be responsible for myself, and I have voted consistently and aggressively against corporate welfare benefits in our state since I've been in office. I've been in Lansing just over a year and a half. I fought hard against corporate welfare and voted oftentimes or sometimes against my own party in that regard. There was that switch data center issue that came up at the tail end of last year about building a data center out in Grand Rapids that was going to absolve them of all tax liability in our state if they came here to do that. I deeply objected to that, voted against it, and encouraged my colleagues to vote against it. There was also an issue where we eliminated a corporate welfare program in our state, and I was able to secure an amendment to that bill that refunded nearly $20 million into our state pension fund because they had been taking money out of the pension fund to pay for this corporate welfare grant that I deeply disagreed with. I was proud of that accomplishment. I think that we should treat taxpayers fairly. The businesses that want to come to Michigan, we should celebrate that fact and certainly provide them every tool that they can use to employ people and take a risk and run their business and have great success in our hope. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be paying taxes either. And I think most reasonable people agree with that.
Every lawmaker wants to put their stamp on something during their term in office. Kevin, what's Tom Barrett's passion?
Well, to pick one, Mark, it's veterans and their care. Tom Barrett has served 16 years in the Michigan Army National Guard. He is an Iraq War veteran. He's the only one in the State House, by the way, who's an Iraq War veteran. He still flies helicopters for the Guard out of Grand Ledge. Michigan has about 700,000 military veterans, and Tom Barrett has sponsored several bills related to their needs. We often hear in the news about the hardships that veterans have in accessing their benefits, among other things. And I asked Representative Barrett if he sees that situation improving.
I think that we're turning a corner to improve quality of life for veterans. A lot of the work that we did this term was more on the policy side, protecting veterans with disabilities who have a service dog, for example. Michigan had no protections for that in our state statute, and there were countless veterans being turned away from places of business or public areas because they had a service dog with them, and people were misinterpreting that as someone bringing their pet into a restaurant with them, for example. And so we changed our state law to protect people in that situation. We also changed state law to protect child custody rights of service members when they're deployed overseas so that they don't have their kids taken away from them back home. And then another bill that I had that allows veterans to transfer their skilled trade experience that they gained on active duty and put that toward their civilian license back home for some of the skilled trade jobs that we need to do a better job highlighting.
And also, Mark, Mr. Barrett mentioned to me that within his role in the Army, he serves as a unit victims advocate for people who are dealing with sexual discrimination and sometimes even sexual violence.
Interesting. There's a little over 2 weeks left before Election Day and many, many candidates out campaigning door to door to hear firsthand what's on voters' minds. Kevin, you told us last week about Teresa Abbott's experience when she talks with people about the presidential race, about how she's hearing stories of how frustrated many are with the tone and the rhetoric from the Clinton and Trump camps. We've also seen many Republicans abandoning their support for Donald Trump in recent weeks. Where does Tom Barrett stand these days?
Well, let's hear that from him.
I will not be voting for Hillary Clinton. I will be voting for Donald Trump in the presidential election. That doesn't mean I agree with everything Donald Trump has said. I certainly don't.
Did he give any specific examples of where he diverges from Donald Trump?
He did not, actually. But I did find it interesting that right after Tom Barrett told me about disagreeing with Donald Trump, he referred back to his own legislative record in the Michigan House. Specifically, he mentioned a bill that he co-sponsored that protects victims of domestic violence, which was ultimately signed into law.
We mentioned that Tom Barrett's victory in the 2014 election was razor thin. He won by just 146 votes. Is he bracing for another tight contest on November 8th?
He is indeed, Mark. State representatives serve just 2 years at a stretch, so almost from day one when they walk in the door, a freshman lawmaker is thinking about securing their second term. After just getting in the door 2 years ago and having one term now under his belt, Representative Barrett says he understands what his constituents expect from him.
Well, I think people expect me to be honest about things, and I think people appreciate that. And I don't think that people have to agree with someone 100% of the time to cast their vote for them. Certainly, that's an impossible standard to expect. And when I won 2 years ago, it was a very slim margin. I had never been on the ballot here in Eaton County, and I had never held political office before. So for me to be able to challenge an incumbent state representative, I think was telling of the accomplishment of even winning in the first place, regardless of the margin. This time around, I've certainly learned that I can't take anything for granted.
And Representative Tom Barrett says if he is reelected, a big focus of his second term, not surprisingly, will again be on military veterans. He says Michigan veterans are missing out on about $800 million worth of unclaimed federal benefits each year, and he wants to do a better job connecting veterans with what they're due.
Current State's Kevin Lavery has been reporting on the race for Michigan's 71st House District seat. Voters go to the polls just a few days from now. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Mark. Happy to do it.
And coming up on Current State, about 400 MSU students identify themselves as having experienced foster care or some form of out-of-home living situation, like homelessness or living with family members who are not their parents. For Neighbors in Action, we'll learn about MSU's Fostering Academics Mentoring Program. It's called FAME, and how they help these students find academic and career success. It's coming up on Current State. There are about 300 sites in Michigan where mastodon remains have been found. Reports now suggest the remains unearthed this month near Mayville, Michigan, up in the Thumb, is among the 10 most intact of all those 300. Researchers at the University of Michigan say it's the most complete mastodon skeleton found in Michigan since the 1940s. That dig wrapped up last Sunday after the discovery of more than 75 complete or nearly complete bones, according to the U of M News Service. Mastodons, of course, are extinct relatives of the elephant. The previously most complete specimen, by the way, was found near Owosso, just a stone's throw from East Lansing, back in the 1940s. It's on display at the U of M Museum of Natural History in Ann Arbor. Current State here on WKAR. Think back to the stress of being in high school, trying to get your homework done, pass the tests, be a well-rounded student, figure out what you're going to do with your life after graduation. Now, imagine having to do all that after being removed from your home and separated from your family members. Not so easy, because success usually takes more than just hard work. It can all depend on how supportive your environment is. The goal of MSU's FAME program is to reach out and provide that supportive environment for students who want it. Here to tell us more about FAME is a student who's been participating, Justin McElwee, along with FAME's program director, Andrea Martino. Justin, Andrea, welcome.
Good morning.
Good to see you. Andrea, FAME stands for Fostering Academics Mentoring Program. What services does the program provide?
We work with students in a variety of different ways to support them in their educational goals. So we provide independent living skills trainings. We provide life skills coaching, where we meet with the students individually, help them set goals and identify action steps to achieve those goals. We also provide a mentoring service. So we match students with volunteer mentors from the community who are working in the field that the student is interested in pursuing. We provide social events, community support, and then we also provide tangible needs. So we have a care closet where they can pick up toiletries, school supplies, food items, things like that.
What are the most common examples that fall under this idea of out-of-home situations?
So foster care is a big piece. Students who've been in a foster care placement. We also have students who've experienced kinship care. So they may have lived with a relative or a guardian, but they never formally entered the foster care system. We have students who've been in guardianship placements, students who've experienced homelessness, and then students who are independent due to extenuating circumstances. So for some reason, they've had a breakdown in the family structure and they're on campus without some strong family support.
Justin, you come from a big family. You grew up in Flint. Tell us a little bit about what was going on in your life when you were back when you were 14.
Well, I was, you know, starting high school around that time, and I came into care with my six siblings. And at first, I was in like kinship care, staying with a cousin family member, and things didn't work out. So I moved around a little bit. Switched high schools and things.
Switched high schools, switched where you were living a few times?
Yep.
Yeah.
Throughout my 4 years in foster care.
What kind of impact did all of that moving around have on your education?
Well, it depends what time of the year I moved around. It definitely disrupted it. I missed some months of school depending on where I was living. If I was within a residential setting or if I was within a foster home, for the most part, I think I I did miss a lot of school because of, you know, moving placements. So you just miss time within the high school setting.
Understood. Sounds pretty disruptive. I'm speaking with Justin McElwee, a student who's been participating in MSU's FAME program, along with FAME's program director, Andrea Martino. Andrea, how hard is it for students who've been in the foster care system or who have been in these out-of-home situations to go to college?
There are a lot of barriers that face against them. So students in foster care, there's a statistic that 80% of youth in high school in foster care say they want to go on to attend college. Fewer than 10% will graduate, and it's actually more, about 3 to 5% graduate by age 26. So there's a big gap there. There's obviously a lot of financial burdens. We see that the biggest thing that seems to be missing is just support. So navigating all of those steps to get to college are very difficult. And when you don't have someone supporting you or helping you fill out the application and file the FAFSA and following up on all those things, a lot of students can fall through the cracks.
You pair students up with volunteer mentors. Talk to us about what these mentors do with the students.
So our mentors meet with our students 4 hours a month, and a lot of times they do social things. They go out to dinner, they go to the movie, they get together to talk. But there's also the professional mentoring component, so they may be helping the students connect to internships, providing feedback on their resume, providing guidance on finding jobs, or helping them network and connect to other people in their professional fields.
You've had a mentor, Justin. What was the most helpful thing your mentor did for you?
Well, I still do have a mentor, just not through FAME formally. He's still my mentor. And we've been having like a mentor-mentee relationship for the last like 3 years. I could say we have became friends in that time. I think the most helpful thing he does is have support outside the college environment, you know? So just going out to eat and getting feedback on life, like just little things when you're worried about maybe applying for a job or need, like she said, feedback on a resume or something. He's definitely always there to talk through these little things in life and work through them.
So there's a social component, definitely, but there's also the professional component. What are you studying, Justin?
I'm studying international relations and economics.
Okay. And your mentor at one time had some kind of experience in that field?
Well, I've previously said I wanted to go to law school, so he's a lawyer.
Oh, I see. Okay. Very interesting. Andrea, do you need volunteer mentors right now?
We do. We always have a need. We have students all throughout the year who identify that they may be interested in being matched with a mentor, so we recruit on an ongoing basis. This time of year, we do have a heavier need, so we have about a dozen students that have come forward in the fall semester here that we're looking to match mentors with. We do require that our mentors have a bachelor's degree, and many of our students in FAME are first-generation college students, so we like to be able to match them with someone who has graduated from college, who knows that experience and can speak to what that process is like. We also require that they participate in an interview, background check, screening, and an orientation training program that we provide.
How do people express their interest in being a mentor? Where do they go? What do they do?
So they can reach out to me. They can find information on our website, and we can get them started in the process.
Justin, what are your plans now? What do you see yourself working toward in the future here?
Well, I'm graduating in May, so right now I'm just looking for full-time jobs, and hopefully in a few years continue with my education and go get my MBA. So that's kind of my future plans. I'm still working through them, to figure it out.
Very good. Talk to us about the needs that this population comes to you with. Is there must be patterns that emerge here in terms of what these students need the most.
Sure. So a lot of what we do and what we see is connecting students to resources and support. So we serve as kind of a central referral source. The students develop close relationships with us, and they feel that the program is a safe place. So they may come to us and identify an academic need or a housing need that we can't directly provide through our program, but we're fortunate to have what we call campus champions. So they're identified faculty and staff members throughout the campus in different departments that we can connect the students to. So if they have a need in housing, we can connect them to the housing champion, and that person can pick it up from there. So we do a lot of connecting to campus resources. The biggest gap that we see across the board is that students just need support. They need help navigating resources. They need adults in their life who can support them. And so being able to connect them to additional supportive adults throughout campus, helping them build their network of support, is really huge for them during their 4 or 5 years here.
About how many students are you serving right now?
We serve about 80 to 100 students a year in
Wow.
different capacities. There's a much greater pool of students that are identified as could be receiving services. So there's about 350 students this year identified that meet some form of eligibility that could participate in services that we're always reaching out to and trying to engage.
Andrea Martino is the program director for FAME. I'm also speaking with Justin McElwee, a student who's been participating in MSU's FAME program. Justin, you've had some interesting internships. Talk to us a little bit about those. Have they helped you learn about what you might want to do? It looks like you're on a kind of a MBA path here now from what you told me earlier. What have the internships done toward that?
Well, I think they helped me out. Help me figure out what I want to do and what I don't want to do, in a sense.
Opposite sides of the same coin, yes.
Yes. When my first internship was down at the House of Representatives in Lansing, that was my first one where, you know, you did the regular, like, political stuff of, like, door knocking and talking with residents, constituents. And my second one was with out in Oregon at Foster Club, and it was an organization that advocated on a national level for child welfare policy, and we go to conferences and speak with youth. So, and I did that my sophomore summer.
Chance to travel as well. Andrea, what do you enjoy? What's the biggest payoff here for you in terms of your role with FAME? When do you feel like, yeah, this is important and I belong here?
Well, I love just working with the students and seeing their growth. So I've been in this role for 4 years now, so I've been able to see kind of the first cohort graduate, which is really exciting. But just getting to build the long-term relationships with the students and see the growth over the years and as they develop, which is something that, you know, typically happens for a college student anyways, as you kind of develop your identity and learn about who you are, and to be a part of that process with the students is really rewarding for me.
You've got a website with a lot of information on it.
Yes.
Remind our listeners of where that is.
So they can find information actually on the School of Social Work's website. We're a community program of the School of Social Work at MSU, so socialwork.msu.edu, and then we're under the Community Programs tab.
I've been speaking with the program director for FAME, Andrea Martino. Also, Justin McElwee's been with us. Justin's an MSU student who's been participating in the FAME program. Its goal is to reach out and provide support for students with a background in away from their families. Justin, Andrea, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We had our final Current State Pop-Up Stories storytelling event of 2016 just last month at Reach Studio Arts Center in Lansing. The theme for that September event was Turning Over a New Leaf. Storyteller Dan Nunez shared a bit about all the different stops he's made along his career path and where that path has led him today.
I feel like life is full of turning over new leaves. Like recently, my girlfriend moved in. The new motif for our living room is Signs of a Struggle. But I'm not going to talk about that. I want to talk about how I became a teacher. A long time ago, I graduated from college, summa cum laude, with a double major, and immediately became a janitor in a war factory. I didn't have a plan. And one day, I was sitting in a janitor's closet, as I was known to do, and I was on some concrete that was either wet or just really, really cold. And I was trying to unclog our upright vacuum for about a half hour, and I felt that pang of shame, which so often precedes a regret. And it occurred to me that I might be wasting my life. My majors in college were creative writing and fine arts, so this wasn't the first time that had occurred to me. But it was really tough. Like, with those creative majors, being a janitor is like the antithesis of what I was supposed to do naturally. Like, I want to manifest things. And my job was to basically undo any evidence that something had occurred every day while people use the things I made to create stuff to make kind of stuff that was destructive. It was a real bummer, all right, all around. So I regrouped, and I went and visited my old high school art teacher. And mostly just for a catharsis. I didn't think she'd have any answers, but she was in need. She's like, hey, you should become a substitute teacher. And it's frighteningly easy to become a substitute teacher. I feel like being a substitute teacher is like limbo in every sense of the word. You're like not really unemployed or employed, and someone's always lowering the bar. So I really liked being a substitute teacher. It was like being an uncle instead of a parent. And about 2 days after I got certified, that teacher broke her arm, which was great for me. Because I became her literal right-hand man. And so for 3 months, I just got to teach with somebody, you know, show me how it's done. Because like I said, it's way too easy to become a substitute teacher. You don't actually have any teaching lessons. That's weird. So anyways, I went into doing that, and I really liked it. I found a passion for teaching, and I did weird things like started Photoshop competitions to get kids into Photoshop. I had a like mustache competition, so it was called Stash for Gold. I'm still doing it. So I became kind of a part-time job enthusiast, and one of the jobs that I picked up, I was kind of accosted by my friend who was working here at Reach, and she said, hey, you should be this Teen Open Studio coordinator. And I was like, sure. And then I didn't do anything about it until it was like an intervention and she cornered me with all the paperwork. And so, yeah, like my life, if I was a bowling ball, if you imagine, have you ever gone to like bumper bowling? You ever done that? I wish I could do that as a 32-year-old man. I can't ask for him now, but that's kind of me. I've been careening down with this trajectory and then like people keep kind of keeping me on track, pushing me back in there. So after my former high school art teacher, there was someone named Gina D who got me involved here, and I started doing ceramics, and I really like it. I teach people how to play with mud for a living, and it's amazing. So I've helped revive this ceramics program and another one across town, and I'm really enjoying it. And right now, I guess the next leaf that I'm looking to turn over is maybe starting my own studio. And so my old roommates, who've done pretty well for themselves, have decided to invest in this. They're my parents. And so I'm really excited for what's coming next. I feel like life is just a series of short-term goals set against delusions of grandeur. And it's really nice to have a plan now. So, yeah, thank you for your time, guys.
That's our show for today. Coming up tomorrow on Current State, branding can make all the difference, even when it comes to the candidates running for president. We'll speak to a University of Detroit marketing professor about the unique ways Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have decided to market themselves during this historic run for president. Plus, Detroit's iconic Motown Museum has announced a plan to raise $50 million for an ambitious expansion project. What's in store at Hitsville, USA? We'll get answers from the museum's chairwoman and CEO, Robin Terry. That is tomorrow on Current State. Hope you can join us then. Peter Worf is the executive producer of our program. Kevin Lavery directed the show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Katie Cook, Jamie Paisley, Brooke Allen, Drew Hill, Andrew, and Isaac Constance. The Current State podcast, available anywhere, anytime at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at KAR Current State. I'm at Mark Bayshore. And on Facebook, we're at Current State from WKAR. We hope to see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Current State on WKAR.